Wow.
Oh, okay.
So you're in a new spot. You're at your co-working spot. Is this, what's the name of the
Yes,
place
I
again?
am in Wayfinder Co-op. It is a co-working space on 5th and Santa Fe in Denver. It's on the first day of my trial week to see if I want to have a membership here. I just last night marked the first night that I was out of my old apartment where I had been for 2 years and technically into the truck, but not actually because I actually slept in my friends Brandis and Wendy's living room because it was supposed to rain, and I don't believe my truck is fully waterproof at the moment. But it didn't rain, and I got very little sleep. And yeah, I've been up since 4:30 in the morning. But my like body hasn't recognized myself as awake until about 8 a.m. So I'm trying my best to, what's the word? Harness. It's not harness, but oh man, what is that word? Anyway, harness all of my cognitive resources. Marshal, that's the word. Marshal my cognitive resources sufficiently for today. Today was supposed to be my first day back at work, but that was also assuming that I would have a little buffer, a little break, but I didn't. I've been full-time moving and cleaning for 5 days straight. I'm so glad that's over. I was moving out of a two-bedroom apartment that I lived in by myself, and it was just all on me. I had some help with loading and unloading the truck in terms of moving things into storage, but that was about it. So I'm physically depleted. Sleep, it has been suffering because stopped sleeping in a bed and started sleeping on a roll-up that's also smaller than a twin-size mattress, so I keep like falling off of it at night. But all of these are just like kinks to be ironed out as the mobile living experiment proceeds. The intention partly behind it is that I free up time to like spacious, thoughtful, focused time for Cosmos and other writing and, ideation adventures. But it is still something I'm holding on faith because it hasn't materialized yet, necessarily. So I'm just hoping for a really restful weekend so I can start to unravel some of this burnout that I've been carrying for years and begin to fill my cup again, which has always, to me, not looked like getting paid per se, although money obviously lubricates many things in life, but it looks like having time and space. So, as radical as this lifestyle change might appear, it actually is like showing you where my priorities and loyalties are. The thing I love more than anything in the world is time and space and quality thereof. So I hope that I will be a little bit more free in those regards, around, for instance, choosing whether I work for pay, because I don't have to pay rent. But also like really being able to focus on more impactful, like bigger campaigns for Cosmos, right? Rather than little by little, like I can actually pour myself into, for instance, a member drive or a big fundraising effort. So without like breaking that up with a bunch of work for clients and the mental distraction, the mental cost of shifting in that way. So at least for a couple months, that's the agenda anyway. That's the plan. But I also want to see how it goes and see if I like it as much as I think I might take to it, and I'm open to changing my mind. That's always been something, like, I'll just do an experiment and see how I feel. I walk right into experiments like this, because I'm curious about the outcomes. I don't try to know anymore what's going to happen. So leaning into that learning edge, as always. And so Lil Duffy is the honorary guest at these meetings. And you'll see her, she looks at the camera right then, how perfect. And you'll see more of her because she'll always have to be with me. Not that she wasn't before, but she'll always be with me wherever we are calling in from. But usually it'll be from a co-working space on weekdays. That's the plan. Work from co-working office, sleep in the truck. Yep. And stay in with friends as well. Check. That's my check-in, I guess.
Yeah, so so can we frame this a little bit? Because part of why we're here is to talk about cosmos. This interweaves, it kind of weaves together with,
yeah,
personal, like, lifestyle choices. Mm-hmm. And also there's a interface, like, around your blog, which is called Fractal Axis, which I think you posted a test post in like minutes ago. And the thought,
it was like 5 minutes after this call was supposed to start. We ran out of time.
Yeah, I know how that goes. I was supposed to publish something yesterday too, and but just for reasons beyond my control, it didn't work out. And that's cool, you know. Your self care is probably more important than whatever calendar deadline we may have put on something.
Right, but the blog also, it feels like it's a type of representation of this transition too. For me, like, developing a regular relationship to sharing my content that I've in some cases accumulated for 10 years and just, like, I'm not the type to share. Like, that's all part of what I'm challenging about myself, right? And so there is a symbolic aspect that's like, it is important that I am making space for that in the space that I'm also freeing up from other old habits. It's like time for new habits and time for a new lifestyle. So it's important, but more so symbolically, you're right, self-care is paramount in the stressful circumstances. But yeah, I got a really rough post in place. It's something I want to go back and edit immediately, but it's there, so I can say that it's there. Yeah, and feel like the blog is, you know, happening. So that feels good.
I think that just starting is it's like 100%. It's 1,000% better than having nothing there at all. Like, and even if it's imperfect, and even if it needs to be edited and has bugs and is confusing, and although it's not, I mean, I think we're not off to a bad start, actually, as far as the basic organization of what we're doing and who's doing what and how things are going. I feel pretty good because we do have an active community. We have things happening. Like, Doug, I think, just joined us. And he's been hosting the cafes and has been uploading some archival footage. Like, we have archival material. Oh, there he is. And there's a lot of it. Like, so there's a collective archival material, and then you have your archival material, and I have mine. And I know not all of it is, like, I mean, I think a lot of it is good. That's just a conceit of, you know, I think that's a necessary conceit. And not all of it, but part of the idea is that we're getting it out, and then like then it's beyond, you know, let history judge or let others receive it as they will, but nobody's going to receive anything unless we actually offer it, unless we actually put it in a place where it can be accessed and engaged with. And I feel like I have my own version of the kind of thing you're doing, like as more in the interior level, on the like the psychic level, is that there's a backlog. It's not just a backlog in a technical sense. It's like a emotional and psychic backlog that I know like takes the form of art. It takes the form of expression, poetry, observation. It intermixes with my, like I can bring it forth into my daily reality and thereby like enliven my daily reality and liberate it actually too. And so I think it's like what you're doing now. I think it's like, I have, you know, we've talked about it already, and I don't know how much this is a podcast ostensibly, so it's you know, presumably public. I don't know how much you've shared or how you even, I think how you're even framing what you're doing has emerged a bit and evolved. But it seems also like a pattern, because when I first met you, Caroline, you had recently completed a documentary called The Sustainable Project. And that involved this kind of like challenge and this like documenting of
the initial lifestyle experiment launched on May 1st, 11 years ago. I was 21. So it's more than an apparent pattern. It's like a chronological pattern. Yes, I tend to, you know, seek the edge. And back then it was about proving that living in a sustainable, as in, you know, ecological footprint way in the context of urban America or the United States, namely, was like doable and fun and all that. And it wasn't either of those things. And, you know, I learned so much about how to basically like the liberation that comes from testing your assumptions in the open, just like, you know, really willingly and openly experimenting with what you think is true. Because I had my illusions come crumbling down on me in a very experientially visceral way. And that actually, the studying of my experiences provided me with insights about sustainable systems in general that I found affirmed later in academic studies about sustainable, like the definition of sustainability in terms of systems, like cybernetics. And that has changed my life. And I mean, I really strongly believe in experiential processes of coming to insight and wisdom about what is and what is not, like about what's real and about how to work with what's there. So this is definitely an extension of that. I felt a little stagnant in my 2-bedroom apartment where it was all too easy for me to cocoon myself in and keep all of my thoughts to myself, all of my feelings to myself, process them through more of a contemplative spiritual way than socially or relationally. But I've, you know, gotten the call, so to speak, to really push myself into something that's, you know, doesn't come to me naturally in a way. But like to really try to be visible and try to influence with my thought and with my praxis, you know, with how I am in the world and what I have to offer as far as, you know, things I've distilled through my experiential sifting device. And yeah, so that, I mean, the blog is part of that. The offering that is Cosmos is part of that. And it, you know, whether or not I am taking to it personally, I do think there's a lot of flexibility in a person. Like a person is really just a set of patterns. And so there's a lot that can be done to influence and shape the behavior of a person from within that is not accountable in the sense of like, oh, I'm not that way. It's like, well, maybe I've been conditioned to not be that way, but nobody is a way or isn't a way fundamentally, except perhaps like via karma, I believe. So like, but all of that can be shaped. It's almost like whittling or something. So I am definitely experimenting with my edge around all of these things, you know, like mm-hmm. what can I do that I don't believe I can do, or what, you know, can I do that needs to be done and it's beyond me even to like relate to it. I don't know. So it's all just, I tend to be very experimental with my life directly. Like I'm like, what if this, what if that? Well, how about I test it, you know, experientially and report the findings. So yeah. So that's just, this is an extension of that in a way, that pattern.
I want to invite Doug to check in, but also to note that there's a huge practical dimension to what you're doing. And just like in the technology, there's a lot of practical like details around user experience, interface, all that stuff, design. But like the first night I think that you were going to be out, we just happened to get a snowstorm in Colorado, right? Like the night we had had a nice April, pretty nice April, it was spring. And then that night, I remember the night before, the storm came through and it was cold. It was like cold and damp. And I was thinking about you. I knew you had a place to stay, but I was thinking about you. And like that will keep coming up. There'll be these practical challenges. They're very concrete, you know, they're not theoretical. You have to figure out how to cope and how to navigate around it, how to continue. So
yeah. If anything, what I'm talking about is about training and adaptivity, which I've been doing for a long time mentally and like physically and all that. Cause you're absolutely right. It was cold and it was snowing and, you know, my thoughts had nothing to do with the circumstances and how I felt about it had nothing to do with it. I had to be with those circumstances. And there's something I love about that, about just submitting to, you know, that process of adaptivity. For me, it's like a spiritual way. And I think Doug and other, like, I think you, Marco, also can connect with that, that there's, almost a path or a way, around this, where the tolerance of discomfort for, you know, higher applications is accepted. It's just, that's what it is.
It's a kind of fasting, actually. It's sort of like a permanent residence fasting, something like that. Shelter fasting, I don't know. No, you have shelter, so it's not that.
That's pretty spot on. No, I like that a lot, that metaphor. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I missed the first few minutes and I get the gist of what you're doing, which I assume you explained a little bit more detail in the first few minutes. But it is a challenge to separate ourselves from, I don't know if it's a social norm, living in an abode, like or a house, an apartment. It's not required. And if you are an individual seeking this spiritual fasting, seeking this dimension, then you, Marco and I clearly have children that cannot reside, or they could, but it would be much more challenging. There's a movie that relates to education as well, or educating the soul, called Captain Fantastic. I don't know if either one has seen it, but it's a superb movie, and essentially this family lives out in the woods and survives, learns survival skill. At the same time, they're developing spiritually and mentally. There's five-year-olds reading like philosophy books and Noam Chomsky. They have Noam Chomsky Day instead of Christmas, so they separate themselves from holidays. It's a beautiful movie, and your life is not a movie though, but it's still beautiful what you're doing. And I'd like to think that if I, in my separate life as an individual without the need to shelter others or surrender to others, I would allow myself to surrender to this nature, this higher calling, perhaps, I don't know. So thank you for doing what you're doing and experimenting.
Thank you for witnessing. And everybody, you know, chooses within their set of constraints that is either perceived or real, and like having children would be a very different circumstance for me. Even having the dog and being solely responsible for my little dog is the source of my greatest stress around this, because I don't want to cause any, you know, like serious difficulties for this animal who I'm responsible for. Myself is another story, right? Like I might be even more adventurous if it weren't for the dog. So yeah. Yep. It's not, you know, it's not without its challenges. For me, the challenges are like where the future joy is. I just trust that process a lot, which is maybe a segue into Cosmos. Talking about Cosmos and our challenges and pending joys and real joys with it. Anybody?
Yeah, well, no, I was hoping Doug would say something else, because I like talking about our lives. I mean, I think that that's one of the things we could weave in, that it's not just theory, you know, it's not just fiction. It's not even just poetry, although I think ultimately it is. But I we're just in such an early stage, but it really feels like things are happening and moving, and like even if it's like very incremental, and we have like a version, a sort of proto version system too in Cosmos Earth, which is incremental, and it follows some of the semantics of, you know, web development, but like we're at 0.1.1, and it's just the three of us and sort of a wider network of supporters and contributors and participants. I think taking the time, I mean, this is at least what I learned partly through having kids and being fairly constrained, is that, you know, growth and change happens through these little steps, like little moments, little scenes, little interactions, like, and they just kind of accumulate over time, and then they become pattern, and they become habit, and they become real. So I think we're like in it, we're just doing it now. It's like we're doing it, and we're just going to grow, basically, and we'll have setbacks, but I think so far as we're committed to it, and so far as we, you know, are able to support ourselves and each other, you know, the result should be joyful. I think by its fruits, you will know it. That's really, I think, the test. And so far, the fruits are abundant and luscious and mostly secret. So what do you think, Doug?
Yeah, I'd add on that the individual pursuit is perhaps sometimes all that we have, that we cannot always speak for others. We are raising children, Marco, but we cannot. I've been struggling with the fact that I have to separate myself for a a certain amount of time each day, even though I know they're being taken care of by two great grandparents, my in-laws. They also come from a different background, and my idea of education, my idea of upbringing is separate from, to a certain extent, of where I want to guide my children. And but we can only, you can't force anything upon others. You cannot, or you can, but it's not the right way to do it. And I'm coming to realize that the more, this is not an egoistic individual I'm talking about, this is the ability of, as an individual, to seek out the highest ideal or the ultimate concerns, or it can easily get lost in well, attempting to learn code or struggling with posting a video or coming up with that phrase you really wanted to put on your webpage or whatever it might be. So it does take a good, healthy balance of finding what's right. But it, all the work that is being done on the individual can trickle into everything else that we do. So here on the website, yep, we're on 0.11 now. And by the way, I did like the, I didn't respond, but the semantics post makes sense to me. So I think that's a good way to go with at least the labeling there. And that right there is a prime example of, well, yeah, we're taking steps to perhaps a year from now, the 1.0, the flip of 0.1. But that doesn't mean it will be complete. That's perhaps even step one in the larger picture. So maybe that's the individual workings branching out to the collective workings. But then once out in the collective workings, we're dealing with multiple individuals, and how do we cater to multiple individuals? What does 2.0 even mean after you reach 1.0? So there's a lot of thought that will go into it, and hard action and pouring our souls into whatever we're doing. So, and I did note last time that I was very satisfied with my own personal work extension. So I hope part of that is for selfish reasons, but these selfish reasons are because I know there's so much more I can do. This idea where I'm at in my life, it's the highest perhaps I can reach within the way my life is going with the skill set I have. So this idea of work and the idea extending my time at my current work will allow me to be more free to decide how to divide up my time. And, so let's get down to the nitty gritty. So there was an agenda, correct?
Yeah, there kind of was. I mean, I think everybody has to make their own arrangements, you know, that's sort of what it, but then to the degree we have surplus energy, because we've made arrangements that allow us to have surplus energy, then we can collaborate on collective arrangements. And I mean, arrangements is a pretty provisional term, you know, but from arrangements, I think we can get to structures, you know, and we can get to more like supportive environments. I think that would be, you know, one of the goals, you know, certainly that I have. And so there's a website, and that's just a kind of two-dimensional representation of something that's so much deeper. Like each individual is a cosmos, basically. And we've encoded that metaphorically into the website, because each individual has like a microcosmos, or so-called microcosmos, which is their domain of free expression, you know, not including hate speech and so forth. But I think that that's like, to the degree that we can see each other's realities, like see through the protective shells and barriers and facades or masks. But at the same time, because there is no like one essential underlying identity, like that we always have to play with forms. We always have to like sort of choose, adopt forms, and then try them and see if they work with us or not. So there's some, I think, experimental, like in the process of not having like a fixed identity, but at the same time being like one with everything, there's like a plan, there's a flux of forms, and we try to find the ones that are practicable and that work for us. And that's like who we are. That's how we show up. It's just like, this is what has worked to keep us going, like individually and in our collectives. But the purpose of Cosmos is to take those networks and to weave them together into like more of a movement, more, or contribute at least to something that's more of a movement of people doing that kind of thing, because we need to create new structures, like the ones that are currently existent are not really, I mean, that the need that we have, that one of the drivers is that the existing structures are not adequate, really. You know, like talk about education. We've had multiple cafes on education now. And I think the critique of the educational system that is interconnected with the political economy and cultural values and everything else, we need radical change, right? And we've been doing, like people have been doing it for a long time. It's just that we're still in the same, we have to keep doing it. You know, this is another iteration. Like Cosmos 0.1 is really, it's not the beginning of something, it's a continuation of something that already began well before us and will continue.
And I deeply desire a community that can hold space for the individual and collective processes of going to our edges. Like, as an artist and as a creative, it's absolutely critical to like what I have to offer the world in terms of, you know, art, like that I do that. And there's been a cocooning phase, which is a normal and acknowledged part of making art, you know, the kind of internally reflective cocoon integrative phase. And it's always balanced with this expressive phase. It's like an inhale and an exhale. And I think, like, for me, the cocoon is something I can become trapped in the sense that I'm so comfortable there, I don't remember why I would do anything else. And, you know, so I'm urged by the universe and my relationship to the universe directly, right, through spiritual practice to go toward what makes me uncomfortable for the right reasons. So that's like, it's, but I recognize it as this inhale, exhale phase shift. And it's something that I've seen many times in my life, that pattern. And I've seen it in other creatives' lives. And I'm really excited for the idea of building a community platform and framework, this, you know, society almost, where like the culture is shaped around these organic processes of what it takes to, you know, go there in one's work, and how one is in one's relations, like all of that. And so these patterns, the pattern of the life cycle of a creative product from incubation to distribution, right? And then like this more binary inhale, exhale process. That's something that if we all are experiencing that, then we can make space for that, and we should, and we can hold space for that. And we can actually tailor what we build to you know, be aware and mindful of those patterns, which is what is missing in the status quo, like, is, you know, acknowledgement of our needs on multiple levels, but even just, you know, the sense of, which is something that's been talked about in the forum and in the conversations a lot, the sense of time and space and what time is it and what is their time for and what is their space and time for? Like, is it allowed to cocoon? That's something that we've talked about. I remember in designing the platform, you know, we want people to grow in their, in, you know, their sense of relationship to Cosmos and to each other. But we've always been, and Marco has brought this up a couple times over the years, like, really sensitive to the fact that sometimes people need to shut out all media, all stimuli, and just focus on what they need to create. And the platform should be conducive to that mode as well, like these different modes that we're in. So yeah, I happen to be just having crossed the threshold of a big phase shift, but really we're all immersed in shifts like that. We just may be more or less conscious of them, or it may take years until we recognize a shift for what it was, you know, years earlier, that whether it's inner or outer, you know. So yeah, enough about my particular phase shift. Let's talk about phase shifts with respect to the development of Cosmos. I believe we were going to talk about Cosmos.Earth and then project management. And then we might just keep it simple today. We're just kind of carrying forward the conversations we were having last time. There's no new big news or agenda items besides just what we were talking about last time, I believe. So, yeah.
Let me ask Doug before we go into those items. How are you on time? Because you mentioned you had 30, 40 minutes.
That was... I've joined another reading group, and it's supposed to go on to the bottom of this hour, so I guess 12:30 your time. So I was projecting to be just now appearing, but I've learned that I can leave early with that reading group.
I feel like I took up too much space in your limited time frame. I'm sorry.
No. So I'm saying I'm open to time at this point. I was to miss the first 30 to 45 minutes. I wasn't limited to that amount of time.
Oh, gotcha.
But it is pouring down rain outside right now, and I left my windows cracked. Not a big issue. But if it continues for more than another 30 minutes or hour, then I will probably go out there to try to mop up some water. But I have, say, another 45 minutes would be useful for me, up to an hour, if we want to do that, but not necessarily needing to take up that much time. And I know you stated you personally are working on little steam, so.
I have a hard stop today in 45 minutes. And I also need to use the bathroom right now, so maybe I can step away.
Yeah, actually, I would like to do that as well. So should we take a 5-minute and then come back and do like our site, dive into the website and things like that?
Yeah, it can be a bisected episode of Cosmos Vision. The first one's like personal and philosophical, and the second half is business.
Okay, I'll pause the recording now, and then it'll just pick up. Okay.
Be right.
I guess we can start recording again, but we are going to talk about Cosmos.Earth, but there's this exponential curve effect where you don't notice the change until it's like about to crash down upon you, because it just kind of grows gradually, but it's going slowly up a curve, and then suddenly it hits like that tilt point, and then it flips, and then it becomes, you know, the vertical aspect becomes apparent. I think that happens creatively. I think it happens in terms of like how you accumulate things over time, like little observations or little thoughts or something. And then like they accumulate to a point that where they reach a critical threshold and then transform, like you were speaking about earlier, Caroline, from the cocoon phase, the chrysalis phase, into the butterfly. But I think that also happens in negative or positive feedback loop, negative consequence cycles,
right?
In the biosphere especially.
And the thing that keeps me up at night more than anything is this cognitive bias that humans have called shifting baseline effect, which is that children who are growing up today are only ever witness to the ecological context that they're witness to, and they can't even imagine or fathom what a healthy ecosystem would look like in that sense, but to them it's normal.
I don't think we can.
If you read
the accounts of like the first, you know, settlers from Europe, right? They described like a paradise. Like there was forests across everywhere, fish, everything.
Imagine. That's the point, is that we have accepted what we were born into as normal. Not in like a moral judgment way, just like that's what is there as the baseline, as what's normal. And so we can't even really envision ourselves like restoring it to the level of those ancestors, right? Because we can't even fathom what that could have been like or looked like or how we intersected with it or any of that. So that's what keeps, that cognitive bias is what keeps me up at night. It's because like there's definitely a risk that people, until it's too late, will just be like, well, now the climate is just this warm. That's just how it is. Not recognizing the deep devastation that we have caused over multiple generations because we only have this first person perspective on things. It's hard to measure or fathom in any conventional way what's happening and what has happened.
We do have the ability to, maybe in our present day and time, to have a voice to speak to others about these changes. So there's an archive of sorts, or this recording here could be something that some random person watches and sparks that mode. But then we're always combating the propaganda or the idea of not necessarily brainwashing, but the mainstream, whatever direction it's going, is the direction we're likely to take, whether as a collective we like it or not. So that's why our voices are all the more important.
And we can imagine, I think imagination is really important to cultivate that. So we can actually ask ourselves, well, what would be better than what we have as the baseline? And really like, really stimulate deep and broad conversations about that. Because we don't have the natural capital inheritance that our ancestors may have, because, you know, certain ancestors have squandered it. And so we have to imagine something new that's never existed, probably something more participatory perhaps. So I think that's critical, and that's also what we stimulate or stoke here in Cosmos, is what's possible.
I want to temper something that I feel I may have said earlier, but it was also, I think, just circulating in the conversation. So I don't think it's just me.
The insects dying off scares me so much. So just you hit a personal chord in me. Where it's like, oh,
yeah. Well, I don't want to make too much of a dichotomy exactly between like the status quo and like change, because like we depend upon a lot of the structures that are the fruits or the product of what we would otherwise identify as the status quo. Like I'm using an Apple computer, I have a beautiful microphone. You know, we have all, like we have a certain amount of means at our disposal that perhaps could have arrived through other pathways, like through non-destructive pathways. You know, ideally we would find ways to recreate the same means without the destructive side effects. That's a hypothetical historical like kind of question, but nonetheless, I mean, we have them, and it's not really, you know, no, we're not, nobody is innocent in this whole game. But the question I think is like, what do we do with them? Like now, what do we do with the means that we have at our disposal? Because they're, you know, quite, you know, even though a lot has been lost, I mean, that everything that you describe as natural capital, that's huge. I mean, it's indescribable. It's incalculable. It's beyond any of our comprehension. But we still have our own bodies. We still have a fair amount of affluence and, you know, relative to, you know, the big scheme of human population and stuff. So, and we have our voices. And I think that's like the key thing here is that bringing those forth into like a chorus or into like a chatter, like the birds, like, you can't shut them up. You know, they will make themselves heard in a certain way. And it's like an effect, because like whatever I'm thinking, whatever I'm feeling, I've received from other people. Like it's because I've read or I've listened to podcasts or somebody's been a mentor to me or a teacher to me, or who, you know, somebody has labored long years, like in their personal cocoon, to produce some quintessence like of wisdom that might get passed on to future generations, and it happens to come to me, and then I can take it up and reanimate it and then apply it to the, you know, present circumstances. Like, so that I think that that process is like the creative cycle that we're engaging.
There is tremendous power and capital, and although using capital in this context is a little weird, just in humans and in our technological extension of humanity, intellectual, creative, cultural capital. What I feel is sorely missing, that, you know, needs to be brought into balance and will be, is ethical and spiritual capital, in the sense of which I think those things give direction. They give direction to the rest. And we have all this crap and have in some ways kind of internalized messages about us as consumers and us as there's a lot of, I think, laziness in the cultural sphere. And we're now reckoning with what it looks like to not be paying attention and to just deliberately or undeliberately, just tuning things out. And I think, you know, if we can cultivate the ethical and spiritual capital, it tends to hone the direction of things and really refine what in many cases is gross, unthinkable, for instance, technological capital, unbelievable things that humans can do. The real question is, what do we want to do and why? And justifying that and refining that through dialogue. To not be grounded through that question and to just have the powers that we've unlocked is a recipe for catastrophe, as many futurists and sci-fi writers have written about, but that's another story. But I think we are so refined in some ways that we have massive potential to amend the human experiment with more of that ethical and spiritual development, and that might bring the whole set of ways in which we're developed into balance.
You use the word amend in the sense of something you would add to the soil to change its composition. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a laziness, and another aspect which I associate more with myself is the fear of either not being heard, not knowing how to be heard. Mm-hmm. Perhaps putting oneself out there, but the more interaction I have, collective, however large or small we are, but the interactions that occur here develop the voice, develop the articulation of the message, which you're saying is the ethical, spiritual capital. Even, I mean, doesn't necessarily have to be those two terms. And ethical, like we, right. we can go beyond ethics, and spiritual, we can go beyond the term spiritual, perhaps. But
I think the word capital is horrible, by the way. I hate that word. Honestly, it's just not a great, it's not a good word for what it's pretends to describe. It's maybe a good word for money, but I don't think it's a great word for other aspects of human experience. Just 2 cents, my two pieces of capital.
There you go.
Yeah, I agree, actually. I mean, there's the 8 types of capital that, you know, we can talk about, and I think the point is to describe fundamentally different or phase shifts, right, between different forms of what we value. For instance, natural capital is always what is like the origin of any value, and it is converted into other forms of capital. So it's kind of important sometimes to trace the conversions. You know, like most of it in our capitalist system is consolidated into accumulated financial capital. But it's destroyed, and the natural capital is destroyed in the process. So we end up with this fat stack of cash and no living system encompassing us anymore. And that's actually the situation that we're in, you know, because of the rules of the game of capitalism, of the economic system that we have, which are ultimately unworkable rules in the long run, but in the short run make people very powerful very fast. So, it's more so like looking from through that lens of it and how things convert and link together like a puzzle. But yeah, how do we talk about what we value and what we want to propagate and what we want to reduce? Speaking of positive and negative feedback loops, that's essentially it. You know, what do we want more of? And what do we want to reduce that is currently manifest?
I'm sorry for interrupting though, Doug, because you were going somewhere with that thought. And I do have to add like one little squiggle of a footnote too, just to that, because there is something about just the framing of nature as capital that I think is problematic. Bookmark that, return to later. But
right, because it's relational intrinsically. Yeah, that's where the value is. Anyway, Doug.
I don't necessarily have much to add, likely because I've already forgotten what I was. But the even the word higher right now, I'm watching my words, the higher dimensions or the alternate ways of seeing maybe is a good way to phrase it right now. Even the closest of kin, sometimes we have difficulty of communicating this consistently. Perhaps it's heard once or twice, but the vision, the imagination into the future and bringing that forth into language is quite a challenge. Even for the most like-minded visionary people, we scratch our individual ego visions and try to tap into the collective vision, this spiritual vision. It is quite a challenge, or it's there for a day, a night when you have a grand poetry reading and get together, but then the next week, you carry that forth, but there's the sleep and wake cycles and the interaction with others that don't wish to contribute to that side of things. And maybe I personally have come to a conclusion that there's only so much demands you can ask for others to hear. There are only so many ears willing to listen. And what is it, Marc Benet? I haven't spoken directly to him. I sent just an email and an odd accumulation of thoughts to this fella that I know is a great friend and inspiration to Marco, and perhaps you know him as well, Caroline. But he has his own YouTube channel now, and for a while, and he does Improv Sutra, which is maybe not necessarily planned to, like, he has a script. That's what improv is, of course, but there's this meditation aspect to it before him. They're difficult to watch sometimes because it's hard to, I'm not present with him, so to watch it on the screen makes it a challenge. But that passion that he puts into his work and the creative impulse, that's one of those that's what Marco was talking about, these individuals who pour their souls into their work for years at a time, able to shun or neglect as much as possible without making it detrimental to their own lives, but they neglect the systematic way of going about the world and pave their own path. It's not going to lead to money. It's not going to lead to fame. It's not going to lead to even anybody liking it. But it's what needs to be done. So I appreciate the efforts of those that are not seeking to change the minds of others, but mm-hmm. to just place it in front of others and go about your day.
Yeah. I really get so fascinated with, like, what wants to be paid attention to. Like, what, you know, because attention is a limited resource. We eat food and drink water, and like, and it turns into this energy to pay attention to our worlds and actually, you know, to care for them. And to, so just, you know, everything you said, Doug, really resonated in the experience of improv, like, and how that, living that way, living improvisationally and like just embracing that as a way. Yeah, I don't know. I forget where I was going with that. let me improv something. No, I feel like all of this is improvisational, but there's probably a shape to this, like, there's some shapes to the pattern in each of us, the creative aspect, that are shared, that I can recognize in you, you know, and you and me. And it's like, there's something about, I like to think about what would happen if, or what would like to happen, right? If that was amplified, those patterns in each other, and like, how would that create this spiral or feedback loops, where, you know, yeah. And like, we all might be using different words to talk about the piece of it that we can distill, but it's the same at some level. Like, and so it's, perhaps we'll forever be ineffable, right? The idea that we can only, each of us can only speak our piece about it, but it's connected to all the pieces at the unspeakable level. It's like eternally frustrating, but it's eternally like refreshing too, right? Because through interaction, like, I refresh or refine what I have to say about what is or what's true or whatever. And I really like to think about what would happen if we'd like paid attention to this attention curating process, where like, we stay in these contexts because they're acknowledging parts of ourselves that are real or connect to, but that are go unacknowledged elsewhere. Like, whatever it might be, I'm fascinated by this process where we end up choosing what we pay attention to, or it chooses us. You know, if we're not being mindful, we just are, you know, products of these kind of habitual behaviors. But if we are like really noticing the reactions or responses to certain things, I don't know. Like, how does watching Improvisutra, which I just looked up and I'm looking forward to checking out myself, like, how does that change your mind or your day or your week or your life? And ditto for any cafe that you participate in. Like, what is the effect of that? And how, so how is, maybe there's a desire element or whatever, like how is that shaping you? And then how are you shaping the world resultantly? I just love the process of that. And I think that it makes sense to create structures and tangible things that actually support this intangible process of what we expose ourselves to and how we're shaped by that. And it doesn't always have to be top of the mind. It doesn't always have to be like, I'm going to do this now because it will have XYZ effect. It's more like, I'm going to invite this into my existence and see what happens. And then there's an evolutionary process that can result from that. And it's, I don't know, the reflection is just that it's very evolutionary what we're doing here, I think. We're really just mixing things together and seeing what sticks and seeing what it comes out of it, seeing what evolves, including of how we do things. It's like, well, let's try doing this. Like, we're like, the topic on the chat today has been around documentation, right? Or the archive. It's like, we don't know what to do until we start doing it and it does or doesn't work. And that's feedback, right? And then like we adjust because we have to. So I don't know. I really enjoy those evolutionary, improvisational kind of, especially collaborative processes. And so that's partly why I'm maybe so gratified to be in these contexts here, which have no plan, but an intuitive one, right? But that, what did you call it? The involutionary, right? Yeah, There's no plan here, but the involutionary, like what transpires. And I kind of really like that actually, as daring as that may sound, it's adventurous, sure, but I like it. That's why I'm self-selecting into these contexts.
Yeah. I have to say a word about Mark Binet because I've known him for quite a while, like 20 some years, and we have some karmic connection. And I think one of the things, I mean, it's not entertainment exactly. Like it may be entertaining, some of his work, but it's not necessarily, like it's made to be hard in a way, because like you have to sit and meditate like for an hour or whatever he does. And he has different levels to his own. He has a whole like 10 level system like that is just different gradations of like time you spend doing it. Here's what I feel like is an illustration of, and it's an evolutionary principle, I believe. And that is biomimicry. That in a system like ours or in any social system, people copy each other. Like they do what other people do, and like they copy behaviors that look like they are, successful or enjoyable or the norm. Like that's just how you do it. So people copy each other, and like part of like what an artist like Mark Binet does, or any of us who may not necessarily be doing it for popular consumption, but we're trying different patterns and we're trying different ways of liberating aspects of ourselves or of making arrangements that work for us economically, socially, or in other ways, like trying different tools, trying different ideas, trying different methods or practices. Like he has a practice. He meditates for an hour, he gets up, and then he just performs whatever comes through him. And he, in his body mind, that turns into these particular voices and characters and scenarios that, you know, are reflective of his deep psychosis. But for somebody else, it would be a different, that was an underhanded joke, but for somebody else, it would be like reflective of them. It would be totally different, but it could be sort of a mimicry because like, look, this is a person who's doing something that's totally unlike what other people are doing on YouTube or social media or anywhere else. But that gives me a certain like idea, like a liberty. Like, what if I tried that, but I did it a little bit like this because I'm different. And I feel like we're doing that all the time in the larger social scale, but then in a smaller, more intentional community like Cosmos, we're doing that intentionally. We're doing that with a deliberate directionality, like you were saying earlier with respect to spiritual and ethical principles. That's generally not, you know, there are somewhat spiritual and ethical principles in YouTube in general, but they're very kind of degraded. So like we have to create alternative like pockets where we could be more intensive and deliberate and constructive with the principles that we enact into our patterns. And so I feel like we learn that from each other. I've learned it by looking at other projects and the ways that people have done things that's similar to what I want to do. And then I kind of copy it, but then I do my own thing, my own twist on it. And then somebody else copies me. And like, it's these reflective patterns, I think that we're creating. And
the word for copy is template.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Heavily in the playbook context. The idea is that we would imitate each other's best practices.
That's right. Yeah. And it's not unoriginal. It's not about that exactly, because this is one of the things about the universe that I think is really interesting. And it's kind of just like it's bewildering me lately in a good way, is that if you had to solve a problem of like infinite sameness and infinite novelty at the same time, like how would you do that? I think that's like what we have, because these same things have happened over and over again, like Trump, for example, like the whole cycle of birth and death and cosmogenesis and, cosmic death, like all that presumably just keeps happening, right? But it keeps feeling, it keeps happening differently. And so it is new all the time. And I think that's really amazing, actually, as a general feature of the cosmos at large. This is not very practical with respect to our website, but it does.
I think it is. And if I could boil it down into whatever my mind's thinking right now is time and space. Everyone has the light span, so there's that time and various other times, and we've noted there's various other spaces, but to get down to the three of us here, so I see you, Marco, as kind of having a lot of potential for myself. There's a lot of potential in what you have set up, and what I imagine your template, your space, your pod that you're sitting in right now, your arrangement with work, though not ideal, is outside of the system as much as possible. You homeschool your children. These things appeal to me. We haven't spoken directly one-on-one about much of this, but maybe I could place a pod in my backyard to do the work that I really desire to do. Maybe I can stay at home and homeschool my children. And so your template goes right along with this buildup of what I desire to have happen. Of course, I'm not going to, I won't be having a zombie poster in the background. my Don DeLillo would be replaced by another author perhaps, but the setup is ideal in a lot of ways. Of course, I can revise that template. I have my own family. But then now Caroline is stepping into a new space, one that I would say trumps our spaces in a certain extent of the spiritual and ethical. There we go. Perhaps it's more economic as well, but so your space right now, it is also inspiring me. Like, what am I capable of? I love camping in the backyard with my son. Perhaps we can try truck living. Maybe the rest of the family can stay home or do something. But no, these are just imaginations in my mind, and I can cut them off when they become unreasonable. But so these templates, the trying out patterns and all the other terms that we use, it comes down to the space. The space is very important, and the time.
And the fit, right? The like aptness, the fit. How does it, does it reduce dissonance? Does it create harmony? And this lifestyle experiment personally is related to that question. And I also want to say what's different now than 11 years ago with my sustainable project, and this is actually critical, and I know we're at time really, but is that I now have a much deeper acknowledgement of relationality than I did then. And so instead of it being a woman against the world kind of framing for the experiment of the lifestyle, like it was for the original sustainable project, now it's actually like, and I'm going to write a blog about this more because I think it's an implicit part of the lifestyle design that I want to actually make explicit that it's intentional. I will be relying on the homes of people like Marco and the ability or, experiment with integrating with people who do have stable housing. And the function of somebody who goes between these different houses and homes and people who are connected in more than, superficial ways, actually, is like, I'm interested in what the shape of that, you could picture a net and like there's frequent transmissions between all the nodes on the net. What does that generate in the lives of the people I'm staying with? But it's this mutual vulnerability where they have to welcome me into their homes, and they have to welcome this kind of like uncertainty about the whole gimmick of like this arrangement into their homes as well. And so in a way it amplifies my dependency on the social network, not in the Facebook sense, in the real sense, the social, connections that I have, the meaningful, reliable friendships that I have. Even though it might look like independence, it's actually really exemplary of interdependence, I feel. It's not like I'm striking out to like live in a hermitude, which actually is a contrast. I was saying I've been very cocooned, and so it's really the opposite. I'm going out to the marketplace to socialize, but the marketplace is, the front range of Colorado with Denver and Boulder and Longmont and what the people here are creating. So, yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to share that reflection.
I think it's interesting because it's not only a test of you personally, but it's like a test of your network as well.
Not like I'm trying to put you on the spot or test those things. Like I need to like prove something. It's really just like, I do think this can open more depth and more vibrancy because of the connectivity, the intensified connectivity, but I also like it will cause the relationships to deepen if they're going to be healthy, because there needs to be different depths of communication and all this kind of stuff. Like I said, different vulnerabilities, right? Because one of the things I'm going to try to do with each person I stay with is ask what they really need or want to have happen and help them. Because I can do everything from babysitting, right, to like business development. And I'm available. I want to be available to these people who I care about, so it's mutually rewarding. That requires people to open up to me. And so it is an experiment in all these ways, but yeah, it's a different shape maybe than what, like, because, you know, status quo society really emphasizes the nuclear family and the household, and this, you know, having a home, your own home, your own car, your own yada yada, as check, the
check,
ideal.
Check.
Right? That's the ideal. And I mean, in some cases, you may feel like connected with that. Like, yes, that's a reasonable ideal. I would like those things, you know? But I'm also like, well, what are the edges of that? What's beyond that? What else could it look like? I mean, so, and this being intentional, right? Not just like, oh, circumstantially, Caroline's homeless, so she needs to crush with people, her friends. It's actually not that, although it like, you can look at anything from a number of angles, which is what makes life interesting, but it's like, you know, for me, from my perspective, it's more about what can be done creatively with innovative shapes and structures like this. Yeah, and so, and Marco being one of the nodes on the connector map that I just, you know, gesticularly demonstrated, should have some insights into that, you know, later too. That I'd be curious to hear once the experiment is truly underway, because it's not really yet. Yeah. I have a feeling there'll be some like magical stuff that comes up. Like, oh, the person I'm going to see tomorrow needs this thing that you're getting rid of. Perfect. You know, that stuff always tends to happen in generative milieus like this. I love that phrase, generative milieu.
Did you have a template that you based this on, or is it your old self 2.0, or is there
a
community of individuals doing this that inspired you?
I intuited it. I don't know of anyone else doing this, but I will say, or like doing it with this kind of design in mind. What was the first question you asked? I was going to say something to that.
Template?
The template.
Yeah, is it based on your own personal template? Like you mentioned your past, like 10 years ago, this is similar to what you were doing, but you were the woman against the world, and now the
entity
comes in, so.
Yeah, no. It wasn't intentionally tied to that, but it is just like, it's a little bit of the permaculture designer in me. It's a little bit of just lifestyle design, like looking at what was limited about my last lifestyle and really recognizing, like, you know, if I was living out of my own vehicle, which I owned, I could really dictate where and what is happening on the daily. I'd be even that much more free to like go on retreat. And then I actually did have a visual on my wall where it was like the west, you know, the mountains here in Denver, everything like to the west is mountains. So it's like on the wall, I had kind of a visual representation of like retreat to the west and the circuit to the east, the circuit being people and the kind of brain, this like connected shape, you know, that I would travel between and stay with, you know, for the relational side of myself. But then there's also the side of myself who really like deeply communes when I'm alone. Well, alone in the sense of, you know, not interacting socially, but like in wilderness contexts, for instance, and able to channel and able to write that much better. So actually designing a lifestyle where I could have the best of both worlds at will was like pretty optimal. Now, there are definitely more logistics to this lifestyle, like actually arranging where I'm staying and negotiating the terms of each stay and each relationship. But I'm also welcoming that challenge too, because if I'm going to be in relationship, I want to be in very intentional relationship, which means paying a high amount of attention and cognitive energy to the health of it. So it kind of is, yeah, the best of both worlds in that way. So it came out of a lifestyle design intuitive process. I'm not basing it on anything except how fun van life looks, hashtag van life on the internet. No, I mean, yeah, I'm influenced by things in the culture for sure, but I don't, this is just, what I think might work for me based on my self-awareness over the years. Yeah. But I'm going to be documenting it so someone else can turn it into a template.
An advanced thank you for what you're doing.
I think some videos. Oh, sorry. I thought you.
No. I just wanted to state that I might actually go with, I tend to embody others pretty easily. I don't. So I'm already imagining quite a bit of the 1.0 Doug, the original monk Doug. I guess was my lifestyle choice, but that's always looming in the background. So as I kind of participate in your experience, I see potential for me to be internally thinking about my own life. So already this conversation here without any official documentation or content really has me thinking. So
I mean, just to say something generic that may be evocative, like there may be a higher order integration of Doug waiting to happen. Like when these worlds like mesh at some level, you know, because you're like in the background, you're processing these things. And maybe that looks like a different lifestyle or not, but like that's been my experience, right? This higher order of integration is possible, but it takes really like reflecting on what may be not missing. I don't want to say missing, but just like suppressed or repressed parts of ourselves that once were more prominent. I mean, I used to be I was a great solo traveler, and I just like haven't done anything like that in years. And I was like, man, there's a certain freshness that I am missing in it. I had it when I had that piece of my lifestyle. So yeah, we'll see.
And you were a filmmaker too. And I checked my interruptive impulse, but that like a video blog, like from your truck would be cool. Like that
would be cool.
On location, kind of real glimpses into the life. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I know. Well, I don't have a phone camera. I don't have a phone with a camera. So I'm super stymied. I've been wanting to document the evolution of the truck and my life. It's just that I don't have the equipment.
I might be able to help you out with that.
Are you
you have a Patreon page, correct? Is that still up and running?
It's not up and running. It's all part of the plan to get those things up and running, but I'm definitely behind on all that and could use general support with that. But yeah, I would love to, you know, accept patronage for not just the journey, but the actual storytelling related to the journey for sure. Yeah, and photos and videos. I would love to do more of that. Anyway, it'll come together somehow. Do you have a phone you're getting rid of, Marco? Is that what you mentioned?
No, we have an old flip camera, but it connects USB, like, and it's HD. We used it when Carmen was young, and it holds like a gig. It holds like an hour of video, but you can just shoot quick clips and then put them on your computer and upload. There's like no configuration, nothing. Just press a big red button and go. And it's just sitting in a drawer, unused. So
I might actually have the same thing. Remember that webcam I bought that I now don't use?
Mm-hmm.
I bought it just like 6 months ago. It has 5 gigs on it. It's just plug and play, but I mean, there's no big red button, but I'm sure I can figure out how to make it like record on the fly. I can look into that. I still need a device anyway. We're going way off.
Yeah. That's all details,
Well, I'll say real quick that thank you for this conversation. I'm glad I was able to make it.
I'm
going to have some good dreams tonight.
Oh, good. Nothing like good dreams. I am also grateful for this conversation, but for a different reason. I'm grateful for the witnessing that took place of my personal story, as is evident because I've said it multiple times today, like I don't share well, or I struggle with that. So I appreciate the witnessing. It's very, you know, validating to be here. But like also feel a little self-conscious that we didn't talk more about what we were supposed to. Then again, there wasn't really an agenda for today that was super firm, and that might have helped me keep on better track if there was. But it was kind of amorphous.
Well, you're not in super project management mode either. Like, you know, you said you were tired, and so why are we gonna like force ourselves to be productive? You know, like why not just talk about things that we might not otherwise get to, because if we were trying to figure out our project management.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I am not in work mode because I'm so tired. But you know what this I've learned that I want to share more in the co-evolve context? Parting thought. I've learned that, so I have been an organizational consultant for years professionally, and I've recently learned to really be aware of how much that has influenced my sense of like physical and workflow organization. Like I really, really like the process of organizing stuff and also like workflows, like how one interacts with one's stuff. And I was like, I bet I can cross over. I can like pitch this to my co-evolve work. If I can coach people who are executive vision, weird, creative, you know, over producers, overachievers around how to structure their habits and their, just make habits actually, really is what it boils down to on the daily, as far that in ways that, you know, more optimal outcomes and less of total overwhelm and taking on everything. That's something where I really want to study more up on actually is habit change and one thing at one step at a time, tweaking something and tracking progress and seeing the results that shift from that. So yeah, I was like, wow, I really enjoy organizing all my crap. What's the deal with that? You know, when I stop to think about it, it actually comes from my organizer background, using that term in a political, you know, sense, organizer. But like, it's interesting how those things connect. Because as a community organizer, I grew a deep obsession with efficiency, because there's so much inefficiency with community process when people are undisciplined and in terms of like democratic decision making. So it's funny how these things have rubbed off, where I'm like all about efficiency and stacking functions now, which is not as organic as I once was, I guess. I don't know.
let's return to that.
Yeah,
I think there's a we'll come back to it. I like being very efficiently inefficient.
Yeah,
whatever that means. If that makes sense.
Excessive. I think there's something to that for sure. You got to have a little like mess for it to be healthy and vibrant, you know.
All right.
Actually, that's what I like. Just the right amount of mess. Everything else organized. All right. On
yeah.
That,
yeah.
That was the theme of the conversation, I think. So we did what we needed to do and see what happens.
We always end up at the thesis, right?
All right. Well, till next time.
Mm-hmm. I hope to be much more rested and like back in the drive, in the cosmos, like driver's seat, so to speak. I'll see you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for staying all the way, Doug, by the way. That was awesome to have you fully in this conversation.
I guess before we go, I'll do my best to be on time, but I'll likely from this point on, because it's going to continue for the unknown future, might be 10, 15 minutes late. I'll try my best to transition quickly.
Okay.
Well, we can also be mindful of that information. And I think it would be really great to have a check-in from you when you do arrive, whenever, you know, we can make space for that. That would be my two cents, even if you miss our check-ins or something. So, okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.